The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, guys. John, I'm a little mangled today.
How are you even here in the room talking to us? I don't have a clue.
It's a harrowing tale.
Yeah. So just a description.
I have my two fingers taped, my two middle fingers taped together.
Right.
Which is hilarious when I'm trying to do air quotes.
Yeah.
Because it's like I'm clawing and people are like, that's not how you do air quotes. I'm like
lobstering.
Waving. Yeah. I'm like waving in the air.
By the way, I love that you do air quotes so much.
Well, I do.
That's something that's an issue
I like to
for you.
Quote, he's a good bartender. He's still a good boy.
Still a good boy.
But it's a harrowing tale,
what
and you're
happened?
Lucky I'm here.
I know. You're
I
injured.
Almost died. I caught a very, you know, low flying, must have been going 60 mile an hour kickball.
Bird. Oh, a kickball.
Yeah. Okay. Bullet.
Yeah, bullet.
And it jammed my finger and it hurt.
Well, this is this kickball league that you've been in for years.
Yeah, and it's...
We just recently talked about how I stumbled into you playing kickball that one day.
That's right. So and I've cut
weird.
Up my legs and like... I'm just saying you're lucky that your partner is still here and around to tell the tale.
Well,
I can't
listen.
Stand hearing this whining considering I chopped the top of my finger
I was just
going to
say
the
this.
Live show, and you're like,
oh
get
God.
Your ass on the
I...
stage.
We were like, hope Wimp. You can make it. Yeah, no, I hear you.
John
Matt.
Was like, you should go to the ER.
I and
okay.
I was like, nope, showtime, let's go.
I know, that's true.
I forgot that he chopped off the
I know,
the top
you all
finger.
Have finger problems. I'm nervous that something's going to happen to me now. I'm like next in
do you
line.
Know how, do you know how upsetting this is as a lesbian? This is my appendage, babe. This is how I live and work in the world. John, are you quitting?
I don't know.
I don't have a partner anymore.
What?
Quit. You quit.
Oh my
after
God,
I said
you
that.
You meant your relationship, and I was like, what?
Yeah, now she can't use her fingers properly anymore. So
now you guys know.
Done.
Yeah.
Now you guys know the regime that I'm living under.
Listen, before this show derails and becomes something that we shouldn't post,
we do have a really exciting and different another shot that we should get to.
That's true. Today's another shot is a little different because we've had the pleasure to talk to two actresses, who are participating in two different. Sort of forms
two
of crime.
Two true
shows.
Crime shows. One is sort of a movie that's scripted but real.
Sherry Shepherd in the Brian Banks movie.
Which, guys, you have to see that movie because
you loved it,
honestly,
right?
Well, I loved it, but also just The Innocence Project features so heavily. It's a true story. You know, I love a doc, but I also love movies that are based on true stories. But if you don't know about The Innocence Project just from us talking about it, you will want to donate all your fucking money to this organization after seeing the movie.
Yeah, totally. And Sherry was so amazing. And to give her time to come in and talk to us was such an honor because I am a huge fan of The View.
Oh, yeah.
So I love the Sherry Shepherd years and I've loved all of her work, really.
She crossed over with Rosie, right?
I believe they did. I can't remember if they were on at the exact same time.
Because I know
she
you're
was
a big Rosie fan. That's why I'm asking.
I love Rosie O'Donnell. Thank you for noticing. But if anything, I know that they like either guested after they had hosted or something together. So there's been plenty of like Sherry and Rosie episodes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Along the way. And then the other one, tell us about the other
is
person.
Is Gia Mantegna.
Yeah, Mantegna.
And she is the daughter actually of Joe Mantegna, who is wildly popular, great actor.
Godfather 3.
Godfather 3. He was in Criminal Minds. He actually did that Lenny Bruce play that I took my mom to. He directed it.
Talked about that.
Yeah. Cause I was like, I think your dad did this. And then I looked it up right before and I was like, yeah, it is him. And she is in this monstrously successful Snapchat show that has what, like 14 million, whatever it's called, Dead Girls Detective Agency.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that the viewers are young because they're Snapchat. On Snapchat. So that feels right to me. But apparently the show is incredible. We talked to her about getting sort of being a noob in the true crime world.
Yeah, and not just that, but like what it was like to film a crime mystery show on Snapchat, which is very different. I mean, you and I are Snapchat types, but like I wouldn't ever think to like watch a TV show, but allegedly 14 million people think otherwise, so I need to get on it.
And you're going to want to stick around for the interview because we ask her, well, first off, we do dramatic reenactments, which you need to be here for, but we do ask her what crime she wished she could solve. And her answer little surprising considering how old she is.
Right.
So definitely stick around. Let's get right into the interviews.
And I just want to add.
Oh, not yet.
Fade to black.
Fade to black.
Dramatic readings will be inserted into actual upcoming episodes.
Will they be on this at the end of this episode or no?
Yeah.
Okay.
The dramatic readings will, but then
in future episodes,
they're from
future shows.
Episodes that we're working on right now.
Yep.
I don't know when they're going to be published, but.
And let's just say John and I have a little contest. And G is the judge. And audience,
let us know what you think.
Yeah. Let's get right into
it. Who should win the Oscars?
That's right. All right. Hi, guys.
Oh, I'm excited about this episode.
This is going to be definitely one of the better ones. As long as Sherry Shepherd doesn't call me like little lady, like Nancy Grace, I feel like we'll get along just fine.
You will not get called little lady. Not at all. That's like when people, you would call me adorable when I first moved to New York.
Yeah, like cute.
And I lived in the Trump building on the West Side.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Interesting. I know. And all of the occupants were like, you're so adorable. And I was like, no, that's for a kitty cat. Yeah. I'm not a cat. Don't call me adorable.
That's right. And dogs.
That's
adorable too.
Like, that's my pet peeve. Do not call me adorable.
Oh,
I'm a grown ass woman.
I know.
Don't
I used to hate being called cute. I'm like, it just don't say anything at all.
Yeah, don't say anything.
Just say I'm funny.
Exactly.
You're my girl, Sherry.
I can't relate to being called cute like that. So sorry, guys.
You're okay, John. You're okay.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna call you little lady. Yeah.
That's fine if
No, it's okay if you call him.
Oh, okay. If I call you little lady,
that's fine with me.
Go, little lady.
We are honored to have you in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Talking about this insane, incredibly good movie,
Thank you, Brian Binks.
I mean, not only is it a great just film in general, but the story is true and empowering. And we have so many questions for you.
Oh, absolutely. Well,
John, you want to kick it off?
What can you tell us about the movie? If set up to the listener, like what is the Brian Binks movie?
Brian Binks was a 16-year-old high school football star slated to go to USC to play football. He was ranked number 11 nationally as a defensive linebacker. And a student in his high school accused him of rape. And at 16 years old, he was arrested and incarcerated. And the judge sentenced him to about 6 years in prison. Mm. And when he got out of prison, essentially it was another 5.5 years of prison because he had the label of a pedophile.
Right.
He could not get a job. His parole officer was on his butt all the time. He was falsely accused.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so it was his fight to clear his name, but the accuser actually contacted him on Facebook and she admitted that she lied. He got together with her and videotaped her, and she admitted on videotape that she had lied about the rape. And he petitioned the California Innocence Project to represent him. They took him after a couple of years of him persisting, and they got him exonerated.
Wow.
And he got to still play for the Atlanta Falcons. It's such a story of triumph and letting go and forgiveness. Mm-hmm. But he did lose 11 years of his life.
Yeah. Which is, you know, he's a victim in his own right. We're constant advocates of the Innocence Project. I donate a lot of money to them.
Oh,
and so this is just
wonderful.
Perfect. This is in my wheelhouse.
Okay.
You know, before you decided to take on the role of Brian Banks' mother, did you know about the case? Where did you hear about it first?
Interestingly enough, when I was co-hosting The View, we had Brian Banks on after he had gotten exonerated.
Oh.
So Brian Banks actually came on to The View, and I remember a woman sitting in the audience, a little shy lady, and it was his mother.
Oh, my God.
And
gosh.
I got to talk to her then. Never in my wildest dreams did I think I would be playing this woman, you know, 6 years later.
Right.
But I did meet him then. But when I had to fight to get the role. It was a really hard audition to get because, you know, my comedy background worked against me.
Of course.
And when I did book the role, I went to sit with her for a couple of hours, and she just just talked to me about the love that she had for Brian. And I said, you are my Shiro. And because I have a son. And she said, she's very shy and understated, Leomi. And she said, I didn't do what any mother wouldn't do. I just love my son. But that love for her son is what made her drive 3.5 hours to the prison and 3.5 hours back every other week. The love for her son, she wrote a letter every week to her son. The love for her son caused her to mortgage her house that she had just bought. She was a school teacher and sell her car to get him an attorney who later had convinced Brian to take a plea deal. And he asked the attorney, can I speak to my mother? He just turned 17 and he was told no because they were trying him as an adult. So her love just made him, kept him sane in his darkest moments. It gave him hope and her faith.
Yeah, that unconditional love is so important, especially when you're on the trial for your life, essentially.
It is, and it, like a mother, that's some strong love, a mother's love. That's a ferocious kind of love.
Was it hard transitioning from comedy to not only a dramatic role, but like the ultimate kind of dramatic role, considering it was a true story?
Right. I've always been yearning to do drama, but, you know, in Hollywood, if they see you as one type, it's very hard to break out of that box into the drama. And I had a lot of no's, but it only takes one person to believe in you, and that was Tom Shadyac. And Tom wrote The Nutty Professor. He directed Eddie Murphy in a lot of his movies. He directed Jim Carrey and Bruce Almighty in a lot of his movies. So he knew how to work with stand-ups. And I had a few FaceTime auditions with him, and he said, I knew I booked it when he said, you know, I had to sit on Eddie and I had to sit on Jim. I think I'm going to have to sit on you. And I was like, sit on me.
Do it.
I've been asking for somebody to sit on me my whole life. I know how that sounds
weird.
I'm
going to take that blurb just myself and that'll be a headline.
That would be the
Sherry Shepherd's.
This is the podcast for that.
Yes, exactly. I was like, yes, I'm here.
You're fine.
But it took Tom to believe in me.
Yeah.
Because even Brian was like, I loved her on the Jamie Foxx show.
Right.
Playing my mom, it helped Brian because I look kind of like his mom. We share a lot of the same features. But once he said yes, it was a little bit, but Tom was very adept in taking the comedic, the funny Sherry, and putting that on the shelf with the fine china and directing me to have bringing more of the pain out.
How did you approach that in this role? Because it's a whole different routine, right? So how did you sort of approach filming and sort of, I guess, even learning the script? Like, was that a whole different process for
it
you?
It was so different from doing a comedy. Yeah. It's so different from being a comedian where you're playing the joke or you're playing the funny. It was sitting with Leomi for a few hours, and Leomi is, she's about to get her master's degree. She's
good
a smart
her.
Cookie.
Yeah.
But like I said, she's very shy. She doesn't really like to talk about what she went through. Mm. And she carries pain like a blanket around her shoulders because she couldn't protect her child.
Right.
And it was a lot of guilt. And so sitting in that of seeing this woman, even though she smiles, there's sadness.
Yeah.
There's always sadness in her eyes. The first time I really saw Leomi smile and be happy was at our premiere. To see the love that Brian Banks, her son, was getting from everybody, she truly was happy. But, you know, sitting up under her, she didn't smile a lot. It was kind of a forced smile. So you had to take in all of those little details.
Right.
And then listening to Brian in the mornings, he would meet with Aldis Hodge, who played him, and I, and talk about how he felt during the scene, what he was going through, because it was all true. And he would talk about how much his mother meant to him. Mm-hmm. So the scene where the police broke in and put their knees in his back and dragged him off, he talked about the pain and how he was so scared. All he could do was look towards his mother. So he would not watch Aldis and I film the scenes with being the mother and son.
Really?
He said it was too painful.
Oh, my goodness.
So, like, during that scene, once he talked to Aldis and I, Aldis Hodge is such a phenomenal actor. When I was on my knees, because that was actually happening, Leomi was on her knees screaming when they took her son from her at 16. It was her baby.
Right.
Aldis turned around and looked at me, and he said, Ma. And it was so heart-wrenching because these cops, the extras, wouldn't let me hug him. They wouldn't let me touch him. So that pain of thinking about the anguish of Leomi watching her baby being torn from her and her not knowing what was going on.
I was just going to say, and not knowing that if not she'd ever
knowing.
See him again.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
And it was always living with that every single day, you know.
When you were sitting with her, what was like the biggest surprise? Like, what did you go in there thinking and then come out being like, oh my gosh, I was wrong about that?
I said to Leomi, you know, if you always think about what you would do in that situation.
Totally.
And I said, you know, if they had taken Jeffrey, my neck was moving. I was like, I would have, you know, if the accuser, I would have jumped on the mama and I would have done that.
Oh my
my God. And she was so quiet, and she said, Sherry, this was something that was so foreign to me.
Yeah.
You know, I was a school teacher. I put my son in every sport there was to keep him out of trouble, and this still happened. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to deal with the cops.
Right.
The girl and her mother were involved in gangs, and, you know, they would all show up in court with all of their uncles and cousins with tattoos. I didn't know what to do. And she was so quiet, and it kind of, I was like, but that's Sherry. This is not Leomi. So
right.
It's that kind of looking at how she handled. So her strength was a quiet strength,
yeah.
Not a big roar. It was a quiet strength.
How did you get to know Brian through all of this?
Oh.
I mean, you had mentioned you had met him before.
And he was on set, obviously, but...
But, like, did you get to, like, sort of get to know him and have a relationship with him
absolutely.
In any way? That's great.
Yeah, Brian was on, he was very involved. He was the one, he got Aldis Hodge all bulked up.
Yeah.
You know, he trained
Brian's
him.
Brian's a big guy, by the way.
Yeah, he was supposed to play football.
Right. Yeah, right,
football.
Exactly.
He's a big man.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like a big teddy bear.
Yep.
Yeah. He doesn't do anything but smile, and so... He was there on set every single day, and in between takes I would just talk to him,
right,
you know, and we would just have conversation, and you ask him questions like, Brian, you technically have the right to be so bitter, but you're not. And he would explain about how you let things go and how it takes control of your mind, it eats at your spirit, and what he was going through. And I couldn't help but have the utmost admiration for this man.
It's amazing.
You know, because his purpose in life and, you know, ostensibly his calling from God was to be a pro football player.
Right.
But when that was ripped away from him, like, what do you have?
Right.
And I think he's actually changing the world more than he would have if he was a pro player.
I was just thinking.
No, he is. Because when I watched the movie, I mean, I think I said to you at the time, I was like, why am I complaining about anything that's going on in my life? Why am I complaining that my lunch is late?
Exactly.
Yeah. I am dumb. I can't believe I'm doing this. Like, these are the people that are really suffering, that are going through
you
something.
You and I were in the same body.
Yeah,
I felt so inadequate as a person. Because I think I came in one day, I was like, where's my wig at?
Yeah.
I ain't got no good wig. Y'all not going to give me, what is my, and then you talk to Brian, he's like, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
He's like, I was in prison for a
week. Yeah, I was in prison.
Yeah, it's like, oh,
a
well,
wig, what's a wig?
But where's my wig? Yeah, right, exactly.
It sounds
like
so
petty.
Petty.
It does.
And you got to know him. He's a life coach. He goes around, he's on the board with the Innocence Project. He fights for people who have no voice.
And I should mention, too, he was on a show on Oxygen, actually, called Final Appeal.
He was Final Appeal.
And that's where I had met him once previously as well. So he's doing a lot of good work.
Absolutely.
Out there.
I'm curious as to you and the Brian Banks story in and of itself and how it sort of corresponds with the Me Too movement and everything that's happening right now. What do you hope that the audiences take away from this movie, and maybe what you learned yourself?
Well, it's very interesting because his Melanie Lybird from This Is Us plays a love interest in the movie.
Yes.
And it's two characters that kind of made up her in the movie. And she had been sexually assaulted in college and nobody believed her. And which happens quite frequently to young women. And it was really interesting how it was very hard for her to hear Brian's story because of what she had gone through. But when they both sat down and talked, they came to together to help each other heal. And I think that this movie shines more of a spotlight on the judicial system, the failing of the justice system.
Yeah.
More than, okay, who was lying and who wasn't.
Right.
It's about the justice system just failed Brian Banks as a 16-year-old, from the parole officer to the police department to the DA to the judge. Had they done their due diligence and just walked the hallways, because he was, one of the charges was kidnapping.
Right.
They would have seen that in order to kidnap this girl, you had to go past a ton of classrooms.
She would have been kicking and screaming.
She would have been kicking and screaming. And I think it was that failure of the justice system that just is a big one, where I hope that this film will encourage people to use their voices to change the judicial system.
Yeah.
It's like When They See Us, the film When They See Us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we look at, you know, you elect the vice president and you know about the president, but what do you know about the DA or the judge? What's their conviction rate? Who do they convict the most? Who are they taking money from to further their interests? I think that's the work that we have to do, because God forbid your child get in front of one of those officials.
Oh, man.
You want to know that you elected an official that is going to represent your interests.
Yeah.
That's a scary thought.
Absolutely. And how do you think that maybe the racial divide played in his case? Do you think it would have changed if he were a white guy?
Sure. I mean, you see where prisons make up the bulk are men of color.
Right.
And like Brian says, men of color make up 16% of the population, but in the prisons, it's over 60%.
Right.
So it's definitely a disparity there. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. You have to look at the conviction rates of these judges and the DAs. So I definitely think that played a part in it. And maybe it played a part in them not doing their due diligence, because you had a 16-year-old that had great grades. It was had a full scholarship. He had a scholarship to 150 schools. He was ranked 11th in the nation as a defensive linebacker. This is not your typical kid,
right,
that would be incarcerated.
Right.
And nobody did any kind of investigation at all. So I definitely think, yeah, color had something to do with it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the woman who accused him was black as
well.
She was
black, yeah.
What happened to her? Like, what's her life like now?
Oh, wow. Zosia Rockamore from the movie Precious, my co-star, because I was in Precious with her, mm-hmm. did a phenomenal job of bringing humanity to this woman.
Yes.
But her and her mother sued this Long Beach school district. They got $1.5 million settlement because they said the school was not safe and did not protect the daughter.
Right.
When Brian was exonerated, the Long Beach school district sued her and got like a $2.1 million settlement. But they disappeared. They ran through their money in about a year, and then they just disappeared off the face of the earth.
I feel like they probably have to, right?
Because it was so big. They played her confession that she lied over the news. And you can Google her, but she's nowhere to be found. And a lot of people want to know, well, was she charged? The statute of limitations had run out, so no, she couldn't be charged.
Did you get the sense that Brian feels like at peace with that?
He absolutely does. Like, he just says, you know, far be it from me to tell somebody to let it go and forgive. And
Hold on to it if you want.
You feel so hypocritical when you're like, you got to let it go. Yeah. I lost my shoe today and I had to let go. You know, but he actually has. He says, it's not that I've forgiven, I've removed myself from that situation.
Exactly.
And I don't give her my energy. And so just to learn from him about letting go, you were in solitary for 60 days at 17 years old. How do you let go of that?
How do you overcome that?
And he really, Brian will give you some deep stuff about it's really your mind.
We're going to have him in on Friday. So
I cannot wait.
We got all these questions
to meet Brian.
Do you have any messages for Brian? We can retreat back to him.
He knows I love him. It's so funny because when he sees me, he's like, hi, Mama. And I'm like, okay, we're done with the movie. All right. You see his long hair?
Do
you see how cute? Come on now, I'm not your mama no more. I mean, you can call me mama, but
he's like, come pick me up, Sherry. Come help me, Sherry.
He's so great because my son Jeffrey, I text Brian all the time and I say, Jeffrey, how do I do this with Brian? Jeffrey's going through this, you know, thing being a teenager.
I was gonna ask how this movie influences you as a parent, knowing that you know what I mean? There's so much
It's hard to think about. Because I have a little black boy.
Right.
And my son has these unique challenges, and he's 14, but he acts like a 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. But his voice is deep, and he looks like he's 14 or 15. And so every day he goes out, I'm praying, but it scares me.
Yeah.
Right.
It's really terrible that I have to explain to Jeffrey, who goes and he hugs police officers when he sees them, that you have some people that might not like you because of your skin color.
Right.
And if you ever have any problems with the police, you say, I have to call my mom. But he calls me mommy. So you have to say, Jeffrey, you have to ask, tell them I wanted to call my mommy.
Right.
And he doesn't understand it. He says, I don't want to talk about it. It makes my stomach hurt. Mm. So he's seen some of the trailers.
It's crushing.
And it really was affecting him to see me on my knees screaming, my son is innocent.
That was such a powerful moment.
It was,
but
I am going to take him to see it.
Good.
I think it will be very hard for him, but I think he needs to see. It's important for him
lesson.
To see.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and to your earlier point, just about Brian being this just like effervescent man after all this terrible shit has really happened to him. You know, we always say on the show that the opposite of love isn't hate, it's indifference. And and for him, I feel like if he put hate on her, that would crush him inside. You know what I mean?
It absolutely
like,
would.
He just needed to step out of that situation and give back to
I
people.
I think Brian can tell you, and his mom would say the same thing, you know, when you hold on to it, it eats at your spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Forgiveness and letting go is not for the other person. It's really for you to move forward in life.
Yep.
And like I said, even Leomi, I asked Leomi, one of the questions I said, weren't you mad at her? Like your son was in prison.
Right.
And she said, no, Sherry, I felt sorry for her in this very quiet voice.
Wow.
And she said, I felt that she was being manipulated by a lot of people around her.
Mm.
And she said, I would sit in court and I would watch them tell her, don't say anything. And I felt sorry for her.
Yeah.
That's another bit of love from this woman.
Yeah. And it kind of explains Brian in a way, that to know that this is the person that influenced him.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. His mother influenced
him. You do sort
of
wonder if they didn't get that $1.5 million when they sued.
Yeah.
Would she have come forward sooner with her? You
no.
know?
No. She was very much controlled by her mom.
Yes. It seemed that in the movie for sure.
Yeah, it was. And so I just thought, Leomi, for you to even not harbor any resentment.
Oh, God.
Towards the woman that accused your son, but literally to feel empathy for a woman. It just, I was like, okay, you are a hero. She's right. like, I'm not.
No, we could all take a page from her book,
Definitely.
Though, for sure. Yeah. I mean, the world would just be a touch better
Such
if
a better
all
place.
Of us had that in
I think that's
it.
Why this movie, I didn't mean to cut you off, I'm
no,
sorry.
No, please.
I think why this movie, Brian Banks, is also important, because we are in a time where it's so much despair and frustration and hatred and just so much negativity going on. And so to see a movie like this and to see how this man, actually a young man triumphant, how he just triumphed, and how it's hope and it's healing and it's joy. Literally by the end of the movie, you want to stand up and scream and shout.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that we need films like that also that, you know, give that. So you can walk out of the theater going, I believe in the humanity of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's good people out there.
There's good people
exist.
Out there. I mean, because a lot of people's hearts were changed in that movie in the justice system.
Yeah.
Right.
To exonerate Brian Banks.
Right.
And that's exactly where the Innocence Project is as effective and as amazing
Can
as
I tell
it
that,
is.
That Justin like, Brooks of the Innocence Project.
I shout
is
them out every
she
single.
She really does. She's
yeah. He doesn't take, he doesn't take money for himself.
Right.
He literally does this. He cares about people. If you're around Justin Brooks and Greg Kinnear, play Justin Brooks.
Right.
You get inspired all over again. Mm-hmm. Like you around Justin, you want to quit your job. Like one of the things I want to do is quit my job and go on the road with Tina Turner. Like and Charlie Wilson of the Gap Band. I want to be a backup dancer for J-Lo. You, I
shoot
want
for the stars.
Shoot for the stars and follow my behind.
Right,
I'm telling.
Exactly.
But you around Justin Brooks from the Innocence Project, and you literally, I want to quit my job and study law.
Yeah. Amen to that.
I do. I just want to carry a briefcase.
Well, I think you would be an amazing lawyer.
I
would hire you for whatever happens to me.
That's the judge would always be like, if you don't stop moving your neck, okay, stop it. Okay.
But if you make the jury laugh,
y'all are really serious. Like, for real. Y'all gonna believe this. Yeah.
And then you need your trial wig. You know
I need
I mean?
My trial wig.
I think it would be a successful endeavor. You should look into it. I don't know.
Oh my God. If I don't book any more gigs, that's
exactly.
right.
Sherry
Shepherd, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about this incredible movie that everyone needs to see.
And Brian Banks, the movie is in theaters on August 9th. Go see it. Sherry, we love you.
We
Please
love
come
you.
Back.
Yes. I would love to.
You're awesome. Going to represent me in court.
Yes.
Girl.
We're getting in trouble.
We're going to get in trouble.
We're going to get in trouble, but I'm going to put up a good fight.
All right.
Thank you
Sherry.
So much, Sherry.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right, guys, welcome to Martinis and Murder, special episode, right?
It's a very special episode. We are being joined today by Gia Mantegna or Mantegna?
Mantegna works for me.
All right, Mantegna.
So sexy, darling. I love it. From Dead Girls Detective Agency on Snapchat, and the new season is out now, I believe, right?
Yeah, we're on our third season now.
Oh my God, congratulations. That's so exciting. We don't really have seasons. We're just podcast into the ether and hope that someone will recognize.
We hope someone listens.
Yeah, right, exactly. But Gia, thank you so much for being here. We wanted to, you know, talk to you a little bit about your career, actually. How did you get into acting?
Oh, well, I mean, I kind of grew up in a family of carny folk, I like to say. like circus people might be a better description, but we just, you know, I was raised around lots of artists and actors and creators, and it was just sort of a natural progression for me to delve into that because I wasn't really equipped for anything else, to be incredibly honest. I was one of those kids that wasn't very good in school academically, and I was just drawn to the arts and photography and acting and singing and performing was just sort of in my blood, and it was something that I just had to do.
Do you know any good carny tricks?
No, just other than just being a complete ham. Yeah, the need for attention and to want to make people laugh.
We relate to it. Yes.
Well, another thing too is your dad is rather famous, right, as an actor?
Yeah. You could say that. I think a lot of people my generation aren't really aware of who he is, but he's been in film and television since I think he started in theater. But he's been at it pretty much his entire life, and now he's, you know, the ripe old age of 70 something, and he's still working and still passionate about it.
He did a Lenny Bruce off Broadway play, and I took my mom to it, and it was a one man show. I think I told you about this, John.
Yeah, you were telling me.
It was so good. Like, riveting, and I didn't think that a one-man show could be as, I mean, even Lenny Bruce, but just so well done, and, you know, you can tell your dad I saw it.
I will. No, that really means a lot. It's something that, you know, he was on Criminal Minds for 14 years.
Yeah.
And now that that's come to a close, he's been really putting a lot of his energy into directing that one-man show with Ronnie Marmo, and it's just been received so well. I think they might be going to Chicago next. He's really proud of it. And like you said, going into it, you're wondering, how are they going to pull this off? How is this going to be engaging watching one guy on stage acting like Lenny Bruce the entire time? It's truly fantastic. I think they did a great job.
Absolutely.
You did mention he was on Criminal Minds. So, and that was as far back as, what, 2007. Do you think that him being on that show maybe sort of inspired you with your show, Dead Girls Detective Agency, in any way?
I guess it definitely falls into a similar genre. Definitely that show is not as teenage drama driven. Ours is definitely more playful and follows. It's almost like a soap opera, we like to think of it, because of all of the characters being intertwined with one another and trying to solve a murder. But yeah, it is similar, definitely. Every episode kind of ends with a cliffhanger and wanting to know who did it. And the whole season is, each season is pretty much trying to figure out who killed which character. So the first and second seasons were all about my character and figuring out how she died and who killed her and why they killed her. And then the next season, season three, we introduce new characters where my character then decides to stay behind and help other teens solve their murders. And then she kind of becomes the head of the investigating team, so to speak.
Well, it's a wildly successful Snapchat series. I mean, season one and season two had 14 million unique viewers, which is incredible numbers we don't see in cable TV outside of maybe the Super Bowl now. Why do you think that the show, outside of the incredible acting and like the story design seemed great, why do you think it's done so well? Because certainly on our podcast, you know, true crime and obviously working at Oxygen has just been this behemoth of a genre. Do you sort of attribute that to the Dead Girls Detective Agency's success, or do you think it's something completely different?
I mean, I think it's the fact that it's on Snapchat to begin with was something that we were all a little trepidatious about in the beginning, because it had never been done before. No one really understood how they could take a crime drama and make it translate seamlessly onto an app that has, you know, 15 seconds worth of footage. The way that the show is written, the way that it's edited together, it's fast paced. It's super concentrated. It works. It completely works. And then when you combine that with the generation that has grown up with technology and understands how that works, and quite honestly is just a little bit can get distracted easily, it allows the viewer to kind of feel like they're in the moment with the characters watching the show, because it moves so quickly. And in normal television, when you watch a crime drama, you have those spaces, you have the air in between scenes that can kind of allow for more drama and more seriousness and more suspense. But because it's on the Snapchat platform, we were able to really pace it up and make it more fast paced and more fun and more teen oriented, because the age demographic for Snapchat is much, much younger than cable television. So we were able to reach those 14 million unique viewers because those are the people that are on Snapchat.
Well, and also, you know, you make such a great point about just the differences in the way people consume their entertainment now. You also starred in the ABC comedy series The Middle. What was it like doing a show on Snapchat versus, you know, a regular network television show? Were there any main differences, whether it was your acting
or how
even,
they film it
or how they filmed it? Like, what was that like for you?
Oh, it was a drastic change.
Really?
Wow. It's something that I had never experienced before, and I don't think any of the other actors had experienced it either. I've never shot vertically because the show is right. on mobile device.
So are you more aware of like your body and like what kind of motions you're doing, I guess?
Everything that I had known up until that point was basically useless.
Well, that's a good place to be as an actor.
We feel that every day, Gia, yeah. every day.
It really was. It was completely different because, you know, when you're watching it on a mobile device, it's a different experience. So right. filming it vertically made it completely different. There was basically no personal space within the scenes with other actors. Because people aren't crowded around a TV watching it, there's less space to create the scene because it's just one person watching the show in their hand. So naturally we have to make that much smaller and much easier to digest. So we can't pack people into scenes. It has to be cut together a certain way.
Right.
The playing within each shot, you really can't, you can't have more than three actors in a shot. Otherwise we're literally standing on top of each other. Having new people come in and looking at their faces going, what is happening? Is this good? Like, how is it going to work? It was amazing and really satisfying to show them, no, trust me, watch, when you see this, you're not going to believe how great it looks. And that's what happened to me season one. I kind of went on set thinking, I don't know how they're going to pull this off. Until day three, when they showed me some dailies, that I saw, oh, this is cool. This is awesome. And it was beautifully shot. I mean, the same attention to lighting and props, the set design, it was done just as artfully as if it would be done for an indie film or a big budget TV show.
Yeah.
Well, and those teens pay attention. Like, yes, they will spot out an inconsistency in 2 seconds, whereas the old timers over here, we just want to be entertained.
Yeah.
In case you weren't aware, we do a true crime podcast called Martinis and Murder that you've been on, and you're sort of on a true crime show right now. Do you have an interest in the true crime space, or are you sort of new to this entire world?
I'm completely new to this world. The closest I've come to any true crime is obviously, you know, watching Criminal Minds on the couch with my family. Mm-hmm. I can't watch it alone. And I love documentaries, and any sort of true crime documentary, I am all about it. I have listened to every podcast. I've watched every documentary about any crime, like Making a Murder and things like that. I just find it really fascinating. So being able to be a part of like a fictional version of that for teens is really fun. And even though the subject matter is pretty heavy, it's still very lighthearted and colorful and exciting.
That's how we feel about our show. Yeah. If you could solve one murder case that hasn't been solved, what would you want to solve?
Yeah. What's your like go-to when you go to sleep and you're thinking about a case?
Natalie Wood's death. Are you kidding me?
Oh, Natalie. That's a great one. Yep. Oh my God. That's so.
Keeps me up at night.
Yeah. Listen, it sounds like you're new to the true crime world, but you're here with your family now. You know what I mean?
We welcome you
into this world.
It's pretty dark, but it's the nicest community you'll ever be a part of.
It is, actually.
I would imagine.
But speaking of blending communities, so all right, you're new to the true crime space. We're somewhat experts in this. You're an expert actor. We are awful. And one of the things that we do on our podcast is when we're reading our script, we sometimes have like police dispatches or calls that have happened and we record it. And then John and I do this like dramatic reading. And I was wondering if we could do a dramatic reading with you and you tell us, well, you're going to do one with me and one with John, and you tell us, A, how we could be better and who's the better actor here.
Yeah.
Oh my, let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
So who am I again?
You're going to be dispatcher in reading one and then the detective in reading two.
Okay. And you guys, okay, and you're the other person, and then I have to determine who was the best.
Exactly.
After we both go. Yeah, so we'll both do reading one first with you, and then you decide, and then we'll both do reading two with you.
Exactly.
Great.
All right, reading one. I'll go first.
Okay.
With reading one.
Darren first.
Are you ready, Gia?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Kitsap 911, what are you reporting?
I've got a fire. Everything is just flaring up. Son of a bitch. Windows are blowing out.
Do you know if everyone's out of the house?
No, they're not. Scene. Okay.
Okay.
Gia, I was warming up. You feel me now.
All right.
All right,
should
John.
I go next?
Yeah, John.
All right. Ready when you are, Gia.
Kitsap 911, what are you reporting?
I've got a fire. Everything is just flaring up. Son of a bitch, windows are blowing out.
Do you know if everyone's out of the house?
No, they're not. Scene.
Gia? I love that she's laughing at
me. She's laughing at me. Scene. Is that a good or a bad thing?
Do people on set say scene once the scene is done? All right, Gia. Who did bet? Who do you believe that the house is on fire?
Who gets the Oscar for the first reading here?
Honestly, Dawn, you had higher stakes. It was fantastic.
So I get the Oscar, you're saying?
Wow, Gia. That's anti-female. Yes, that's okay, yes. Gia.
I never win anything on
the show. I've been robbed. Now you go first with reading too. Yes, Gia.
We need to just read the words. There was a fire, and I think you were just a little casual about it.
I was just warming up, Gia. I have more in me. Trust me, I have more in me.
All right, I'm going to go first for the second reading, and then that'll give Darren an.
You're going to be Angela. Okay, John, you're Angela.
All right, let me know when you're ready, Gia.
Who's Angela? You're Angela.
I'll be Angela for this.
You're going to be the detective, Gia.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, right. I'm ready.
All right, I have not read this yet, yeah, so this is going to be fun.
If you fuck up, that's it, John.
All right. Allison had head lice again. That's why he was pissed. He saw it when he was getting in his car, and I was bitching at him and hollering at him, and he said he was going to leave, and I told him to go ahead, and then he left.
You told us he did call after he left Wednesday evening?
Once.
And what did he say when he called?
I said, please come home. And he said, I'll be home in a little while. So you guys will go look for him then?
Yes, we'll start to contact his other friends and relatives.
Scene.
Her voice is so much better than anything that we could ever do. We need to call in Gia to do all of our reenactments.
It's almost like she's a paid actor, right?
Almost. Yeah. It's almost like you should do this for a living, Gia. You should really consider this.
Okay, Gia, Darren's up.
All right, I'm Angela. You ready?
All right, let's do it, Angela.
Allison had head lice again. That's why he was pissed. He saw it when she was getting in his car. And I was bitching at him and hollering at him. And he said he was going to leave. And I told him to go ahead. And then he left.
You told us he did call after he left Wednesday evening?
Once.
And what did he say when he called?
I said, please come home. And he said, I'll be home in a little while. So you guys will look for him then.
Yes, we'll start to contact with our friends and relatives.
Scene.
Gia?
Ooh, this one's actually a little tougher because we both took creative liberties, but Gia, what do you think?
This is a really tough one.
Can I go two for two? Can
I'm
go
crying.
Two for
I'm
two?
Crying here, Gia.
I know that, you know, John, you did flub the line a little bit.
I did, I know. I admit, yes, thank you.
It was, it's a little dense with... context because we don't really know what's going on, so that flub really it was a problem. We needed that background to make sense of what was happening.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I think Darren, you really took this one.
Oh man,
you weren't full enough Angela for Gia, so I take the Angela prize. Yes.
I'm very happy we could
real,
split
and
that.
You were believing what you were saying, unlike the fire that. You did not believe
unlike the fire. Yeah, that's fair. I'm more of an Angela than a fire anyway.
Yeah, I think that's
fair.
This is
fair. You. I've got a lot.
Gia, thank you so
much. You're amazing, Gia. We love you. Thank you so much for entertaining us and making us feel like we have some semblance of some skill somewhere. So thank you so much.
You did a great job.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Gia. And guys, make sure you check out Dead Girls Detective Agency on Snapchat.
New season is out now. Yeah. Watch Gia in action.
Will you come back on the show and read with us maybe sometime in the future? Maybe if you're around New York City, potentially?
Absolutely. I'd love to. I'd actually like to see your faces.
Yes. Oh, we're much worse looking than you think. Trust us.
We're not on Snapchat. Let's put it that way.
We need filters.
Yeah, we need the filters.
Thank you, Gia. We appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Thank you. You too,
guys. All right,
bye.
I mean, two glorious women, right?
I mean, it's so interesting because they're both in different places in their careers, per se. But and such different meaning. Like, one is about a really intense, true
totally.
Story, and the other one is like a mystery, a scripted mystery. So it's really fun.
Do you think that Gia felt bad and like split up the votes one to one? You know what I mean? Do you think she was like, I got to give each of them one?
Well, maybe, but I do think I deserve the Oscar for the first one.
Yes.
I knew what to do in the event of a fire.
You did. I was a better Angela, though. I feel like I channeled my Angela better than you.
And as she said, I flubbed my line, and you can't do that and win an Oscar. So I think it's fair.
She judged fairly. For sure. Because her feedback was too genuine, and it was like acting school.
She definitely paid. Really, I know.
You guys got schooled.
Yeah,
we did. She was also clearly a cut above in terms of delivering her lines.
How dare you?
Yeah,
that's
insulting, Matt.
I have an Oscar.
Yeah, right. We have a wildly successful podcast. Okay?
And an Oscar from Gia. Okay?
Yeah, exactly. God, what a dick.
Well, we hope you guys love this episode. I know it's not our traditional Another Shot, but we like mixing it up from time to time.
Yeah, also, you know, you and I stopped being interesting last week,
that's
so we
true.
Have absolutely nothing to say anymore.
Nope, not at all.
That's it.
We'll see you Sunday.
Bye.
Bye.